Back in the day, I used to work for the National Trust up in Scotland. It was a really lonely job, with a lot of it spent either driving long distances or walking around the Highlands in dire weather conditions. At work, I used to drive around this big 4x4, but off-duty, I had to use my own car, which was absolutely crap. So this one Saturday, I planned to drive back down to England for my mom's birthday. Me and my boyfriend had this whole big thing planned for her. I'd drive down in the morning, help get set up, then I'd go and pick mom up for the big surprise. I was massively excited about it, and massively confident that my mom would be over the moon with it. What I wasn't confident about was the ability of my poor little Nissan Micra to get me there without giving me trouble. I was driving through the Highlands, absolute arse end of nowhere and all, and the engine started making some really unhealthy noises. I pulled over to the side of the road, but I couldn't work out what was wrong. I thought I'd be able to get it to a garage and risk being a little bit late, but when I got back in my car and tried starting it up again, nothing. The engine was trying to turn over, just never coming to life, and no matter how hard I tried or what little tricks I tried to pull, I just couldn't get the car to start. These days, I'd have just pulled up an app and had a bloke out for repairs or a tow within an hour or so. But back then, in the age of flip phones and spotty mobile reception, breaking down in the middle of nowhere could be a huge pain in the bottom. I tried the engine a few more times while mentally preparing myself to actually get out and walk. This was in the middle of November, by the way, so it was absolutely freezing as it was, but then the Highland gales meant the idea of walking anywhere was grim beyond belief. I fought it for as long as I could, but in the end, I fastened up my coat, whacked on my hat and gloves, and got out of my car to face the cold. The plan was to walk to the nearest anything, which hopefully had a phone or someone capable of engine repairs, but then no sooner had I started walking, but a car suddenly appeared in the distance. Each side of the road was lined with trees, and the road kind of snaked off in the distance, so the car's appearance took me by surprise at first. I actually said a prayer to myself that whoever it was would pull over for me, and when they did, I thought those prayers had been answered. But at the risk of sounding a bit melodramatic, I don't think it was God that answered my prayers that day, rather than his opposite number downstairs. Anyways, the car pulls over and this quite friendly-looking middle-aged man rolls down the window and asks if I'm alright. I explain the situation, tell him where my car is, and he says that depending on how bad the damage is, he might be able to get his mate to come and fix it on the cheap. I just about danced a little jig that I was so happy. Then he invites me into his car and gives me a lift back to mine. We made a bit of small talk after I noticed his English accent and we both swapped stories explaining why we were both up in Scotland. After we pulled up behind my car, he pulled out his mobile and started texting someone, apparently the person who was going to come fix my car. When I asked him, he explained that up in the Highlands, it was much better to send texts with that little signal you could muster. It was a little slower in terms of response time and all, but the message actually went through loud and clear instead of garbled and spotty. He told me not to worry though, as his mechanic friend worked Saturdays and was probably close to a phone. Those of you in your 20s might not remember the ritual of holding your plastic brick of a phone high above your head to try and force a text message through, but after a minute or so of that, my Highland Samaritan assured me that the text had both been received and read. Everything was looking hunky-dory. All I had to do was to be patient and hope for the best. Within a few minutes, the kind stranger's phone had buzzed, and he reported that his mate was on the way, although he wouldn't be arriving for another 20 minutes or so. 20 minutes I could deal with, and if the guy could get me to my mom's surprise party on time, the one I'd spent a month planning, I was willing to give him everything I had in my wallet. But then, as I sat waiting with the bloke, still making the same small talk, I noticed that he changed some minor detail in his story. I won't bore you with the ins and out of it, but he basically told me his business was in one place, and then about 10 to 15 minutes later, he told me it was based somewhere else. I didn't jump on the sudden change of detail or anything. I mean, a business can have more than one branch, can it? And people misspeak all the time, so I'm not exactly going to act all Sherlock Holmes on a bloke who's supposedly doing me a favor, am I? That was the first red flag, you might say. One I didn't really acknowledge until after the event itself. It was only the second that actually caught my attention. After a brief lull in the conversation, the man asked if anyone was expecting me. He used that exact same phrase too, expecting you. And I must have given him a funny look or something because he clarified with, you know, have you got any plans later? I started telling him about my mom's party, how I'd been planning it for ages, how my whole family expected me to be there. And instead of showing any interest or enthusiasm whatsoever, he sort of nodded and started staring off into the distance like he was thinking about something. That wasn't what got me, though. It was how he'd phrased the question. Was anyone expecting me? And then considering he was apparently just bringing his mate to fix my car, and I hadn't heard what they'd said to each other. It all added up to a really bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. Call it a woman's intuition, but I knew I had to do something, anything to try to get ahead of what I feared the most. I asked the guy how long his mechanic friend is going to be, and after his long and contemplative state, he snapped right back into his friendly. He checked his phone and then told me, "Seems like it's only going to be a few more minutes." So I put my little plan into action. I told the bloke that I had to grab a few things from my car just in case it needed a tow or I had to go anywhere, then slipped out of his car and walked towards my own. Once I was there, I put on a show of looking for things, and when what I was doing in actual fact was delaying time until his mechanic friend arrived. If it was some bloke in overalls driving his work van, then yeah, I probably had nothing to worry about. But anything else, I'd put phase two of my plan into action. I kept at it for a few minutes, fishing around for absolutely nothing while keeping my eyes glued to the road behind us. Then lo and behold, a big white van comes from around the bend a few hundred yards behind us, then starts pulling in behind the stranger's car. The van was all white, no marking on it at all, and it looked brand new. On top of that, there were two people sitting in the cab, not just one as I'd been expecting. Like I said, if everyone's intentions were good, then me acting a bit paranoid wasn't going to do anyone any harm. The mechanic and his friend might think that I was a bit weird, but weird I can live with. What I couldn't live with was the feeling I was walking into some kind of trap. The moment the van started to pull in behind the stranger's car, I hurried back to him and told him something like, "I'm just gonna nip for a wee. I'll be back in a few." At that, I scurried off into the trees at the side of the road and kept myself crouched and out of sight as if I was actually having a wee. But in actual fact, I'm just watching the seemingly kind stranger and his friends to make sure that they didn't have anything planned. I stayed where I was, telling myself I wouldn't move until I got a good look at the two blokes who'd just pulled up in the van. But the minutes ticked by and no one moved. Eventually, I heard the stranger's voice calling me from the side of the road. He sounded friendly at first, and just let me know that the blokes were working on my car. Only thing was, I could see a bit of my car, and there was no one standing near it. I still felt like I was going half mad at this point, that I'd gotten myself into a tizzy and had completely overreacted. Then, right as I told myself that I was gonna feel very silly after this if the guys really were there just to fix my car, the stranger's tone of voice changed dramatically. That alone sent a chill through me, but what truly terrified me was when he used my name. At no point in our conversation had we ever swapped names or introduced ourselves formally. I know that sounds a bit mental, since I was sitting with the bloke for the better part of a half hour, but my mind was on other things, and evidently his was too, because he never bothered to introduce himself either. I know there's always a chance that I let it slip during our chat and just not remembered it, but I certainly didn't know his name, which made it all the more frightening when he told me to show myself. He made it clear that if I didn't, it wouldn't be good for me, and that I might actually get to my mom's party on time if I just did as he told me. Squatting down among the clump of trees, trying to stay out of sight of those not-so-benevolent strangers, they made for the scariest few moments of my entire life. I didn't think it was possible to get any more frightened than that, but I was wrong. Suddenly, I heard an engine start up, but I knew from how healthy it sounded that it wasn't mine. The next thing, I see the stranger's car drive off, and that's the first stranger who picked me up not the two strangers in the van. I thought that might mean that the van was about to drive off too, so I poked my head out from behind the trees a wee bit to get a better look. That's when I see a man, wearing a balaclava, walking through the trees with his head on a swivel like he's searching for me. Remember what I said about being wrong regarding how scared I could be? I can actually remember most of the stuff that happened, but after seeing that guy in his mask, quite obviously searching for yours truly, my memory actually gets a bit spotty. I know I just ran, further and faster and harder than I ever ran in my life. I remember being sick a bit when I couldn't run any further, and I remember many cars passing me before a driver finally bothered to stop to see if I was actually okay. I also remember being frightened out of my wits that the first stranger or the guys in the van would come across me, but thankfully that didn't happen. Instead, I was driven to a police station, where I gave a statement. After that came a trip to a mechanic's, which resulted in me finding out my car wouldn't be roadworthy for at least 24 hours. After that, I got a room and a bed and breakfast, got myself a late lunch, then cried on the phone to my mom up in my room. I actually think it was the single worst day of my life. I let my mom down, had a dip into my savings to pay for engine repairs, and it was just a complete nightmare of a day. And to top it all off, I almost got kidnapped or murdered as well. I just didn't think things like that happened in real life, or if they did, I certainly didn't think it had ever happened to me. I was able to give a really detailed description of the first guy along with what car he was driving, but as for the other two men, I didn't have much to say aside from what their van looked like. The police promised that they'd do all they could, and they even got the first guy in for questioning. But given that he hadn't actually broken any laws, they were unable to charge him with anything. The police had asked him about the masked men in the white van, but he just claimed he didn't know what they were talking about. According to him, he tried to do a favor to a young woman whose car had broken down, and the next thing, she's off into the woods in a blind panic. They let him go, but I know he was involved in it, and I know he only let me see his face because he thought I was a done deal. But if that's the case, how many other women and girls have his tactics worked on? And that's the thought I find myself living with after all these years. I can be thankful and grateful and whatever else I can be that I didn't end up a victim that day, but I can't be the only one. There have to be more. Girls who didn't get away. And it haunts me to wonder where they are now.
I am a proud Floridian. At the time of this story, early 2000s, I was going to college in South Florida, and I lived with my family in my hometown located in the Panhandle. It's about a 7-hour drive up through Central Florida to get between my school and my house, so I mostly went home just for the holidays. It was the Thanksgiving of my junior year, and I was excited that I had been able to rearrange my midterms to be able to leave campus 3 days ahead of everyone else. I was expecting to beat the masses of traffic, and I was hoping for a quick trip back home. My roommates wanted to have one last meal together before we all left for break. So we all met up at the campus dining hall around 4 p.m., and I set off on my journey around 5:30. Around 10 p.m., I was just a bit more than halfway there. I always stopped at this mom-and-pop kind of diner by the side of the highway to grab some food, use the restroom, and called my dad to let him know that I was okay. I didn't have a cell phone back then. Well, I hadn't been through here since summer, and unfortunately the place went out of business. So, a bit bummed out that I wasn't going to be able to get my chocolate chip pancakes, I just kept going. There really wasn't much build up around there at the time. So when I saw signs for a rest stop in, of all places on God's green earth, some bumfuck town called Alachua, I went and parked directly under the streetlight for safety and used the facilities, called my dad on the payphone, etc. I didn't see anyone else there, except for a very exhausted looking woman, who asked me for directions, saying that she was with her husband and two small children, and they had made a wrong turn trying to get to Disney. Alachua is about 150 miles from Disney World. So I left the rest area, and was walking back to my car when I noticed a beat-up, unmarked, bluish-gray work van parked very close to the driver's side door of my 95 Honda Civic. I thought, yeah, okay, that's pretty weird. Of course, it had Florida tags on it. So it couldn't have been the lady I talked to before. I distinctly remember she said she was from Virginia. I turned around and hightailed it back to the rest stop, promptly running into some random middle-aged guy who had two little boys with him. It turns out that it was his wife that I had spoken to before. She emerged from the bathroom a second later. I told him what was going on with the van and how I didn't know what to do. He said that he would go and check it out. So he left the kids with his wife, then walked up to the driver's side door of the van. He stood there for a moment before speaking. His voice awkwardly quivered, but I could hear him yelling from where we were standing, about 100 feet away.
Excuse me, gentlemen. We've already called the police, so I'm going to have to politely suggest that you get out of here.
He then ran back to us, grabbed his wife and kids, and pointed to me with a swift,
"You, come on, let's get in the car, now."
And we all ran back to his car together. Very confused, sitting in the back seat of a stranger's SUV, while he went and used the payphone, presumably to call the police. Meanwhile, the van pulled out of there. I had never seen someone get the out of there quite like they got the out of there. They ran up onto the curb on their way out. They burned rubber. It was almost comical. The cops got there and I found out what happened. The man went to go check out the van, and he could see inside pretty well, because I had parked under the streetlight. The first thing he noticed was that all the seats except for the driver's seat had been removed. There was someone sitting in the driver's seat, and another guy hiding in the back, with a tarp laid out, and a bunch of other random items back there that I couldn't immediately identify. Neither of the men were reading a newspaper or a map. They were both apparently just sitting there, waiting. Still makes me sick just thinking about it. This happened when I was 14. I was home alone one weekend while my parents were at a work convention out of state. I was in my bedroom playing Rocket League with two of my friends. To clarify, they weren't in the room with me. I was talking to them on my headset. During the game, I heard a thump from downstairs. This wasn't unusual because I have two cats who wrestle each other sometimes, and they often make a lot of noise while they're doing it. So I assumed that's what it was and resumed my game. But I slightly turned down the volume to hear if the noise persisted. 2 minutes later, I hear another thump, followed by what sounded like a grunt. "Hang on, guys. I think I hear something downstairs."
"Go check it out. We'll be here when you get back."
I began to make my way downstairs, thinking that my cats were wrestling rougher than they usually do. But as I got about halfway, I froze. I could hear what sounded like men whispering to each other, coming from the living room. I crouched down to get a small peek into the living room and saw three men, dressed in black. I felt my chest sink in when I saw them. I slowly went back upstairs. And of course, like in a typical horror film, the very last step made a loud creak. The entire house went silent. I knew that they heard it. Thinking on my feet, I quietly went to my room and threw on my headset. "Guys, I need you to call 911. There are three men inside my house."
What?
"Look, I don't have time to explain. Just call the cops and send them to my house right now. I'm being 100% serious." I then threw my headset on the bed. I could hear footsteps coming up the stairs. I had to think fast. I knew that if I locked myself inside my room, they would know where I was. so I closed the door and snuck over to my parents' room, leaving the door open so they wouldn't think to check it. I know the logic is flawed, but I had to think fast. 5 seconds later, I heard a pair of heavy boots hit the wooden floor, accompanied by two more sets. I then heard them get louder as they came down the hall and stopped outside my bedroom. I heard pounding on my bedroom door, followed by a deep voice saying,
"Open up, kid, before I kick this door down."
I lost my nerve and made a rash decision. I made a break for my parents' bedroom window and slid it open. I must have made a lot of noise while I was doing it, because I heard the footsteps coming towards my parents' bedroom now. I looked over my shoulder and saw a dark figure appear in the doorway.
"Get back here!"
the man yelled as he ran towards me. At this point, I tried jumping out of the window, but the man grabbed one of my ankles. Luckily, I was able to move my feet and slip out of my shoe, and I fell onto the small roof above my back porch. The man at the window jumped after me. I remember seeing a pair of boots coming right at me. I swear the man's feet would have gone right through me if I hadn't rolled off the roof at the last second. I landed awkwardly on my left ankle, but otherwise, I was okay. During all the commotion, one of the men ran downstairs to cut me off. Limping on one foot, I made it to the backyard gate before the man grabbed me and threw me to the ground. I tried to yell, but the man covered my mouth with his hand as the two other men climbed down from the window. The three of them began pulling me back into the house. But before they could get me through the door, I heard the sound of police sirens closing in. The men all looked at each other.
"Shit!"
They dropped me and ran towards the back gate. I limped my way to the front door and yanked it open and yelled at the police officers.
"Hey, they're in the backyard."
Three of the officers ran towards the backyard, while another helped me to one of the police cars. They managed to catch one of the assailants, while the other two made it over the fence. They threw the man into one of the cruisers as I was giving my statement. Soon, the two friends I was playing online with pulled into the driveway on their bikes.
"Hey, Gabe, are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks for calling the cops for me."
The man that was caught was charged with burglary and attempted kidnapping. It turns out that the men broke through the basement window. I'm thankful that I managed to escape with only a sprained ankle. My lesson to everyone listening is to always follow your gut and never ignore any sounds you hear while you're home alone.
As luck would have it, I inherited a crappy piece of property in my early 30s when an uncle passed away. I know that sounds ungrateful, but if you had seen it, you would have laughed just like the rest of my family did. They teased me with countless haunted stories, due to the fact that the property was in a wooded area in the middle of nowhere. I decided that I might as well go out and take a look one weekend, but no one was available to go with me. Mom was afraid for me and made me promise to call every night, seeing as I left Friday afternoon, and planned to come back on Saturday. I drove a van, so I had decided that I would sleep in it, even though there was a self-contained cabin there. Unlucky for me, I was advised that there was no running water, but I had already resigned myself to fixing the place up and selling it even if I got a low price for it. When I pulled up to the driveway on the 4-acre property, I felt shivers going down my spine. I couldn't put my finger on why that happened, but I ignored it and continued to drive. The trees were so thick that I imagined myself getting lost, but soon I saw the cabin, which seemed too new to be in these shabby surroundings. There were a couple of abandoned old cars and a haphazard pile of rotting wood near the shed, which was next to the cabin. When I got out of my car, I felt icicles running through my veins. Maybe it was nerves, but I was sure I saw a shadow in the woods. I felt stupid, but I called out, "Hello?" Of course, nothing was there, and the shadow disappeared. I actually thought it might have been a bear, so I raced to the front door and fiddled with the keys, eventually unlocking the door and letting myself in. There was no furniture apart from an old table and only one old chair. It was obvious that my uncle started doing the place up, but his death intervened. Thinking of him, I worried that his ghost might be haunting the cabin. Little did I realize at the time, the scariest things were to happen outside. I started to wonder if I would stay at all, but found myself dragging my bags and air mattress in. I sat at the table and ate a makeshift meal, making mental notes about what I had to do to get the place ready for sale. Then I heard a metallic noise not far from the back door. I couldn't be sure, but it sounded like a knife or axe being sharpened. Fair enough, I do have an overactive imagination, but the sound was very real to me. Haunted stories usually don't scare me one bit, but when I looked out the back window, there was nothing to see at first. As soon as I moved to go back to the table, something caught my attention out of the corner of my left eye. I gasped when I turned back and saw what I thought was a huge, hulking silhouette staring at me from the edge of the woods. It was too small to be a bear, but why would there be a person out here in the middle of nowhere? I moved over to the window and had a second look, but it was gone. I could have kicked myself for not bringing a weapon with me. I didn't even have a multi-tool gadget. Even though I am female and was quite tough at the time, I had been a tomboy all my life. I always had tools on me, but all I had at the time was a flashlight. Deciding not to be brave, I stayed in the cabin and wrote notes in my journal. I froze when I heard the metallic sound again. This time I was sure that it was inside the cabin. I got up and nervously crept around, saying, "Who's there?" Believe me when I tell you that I jumped out of my skin when a shadow walked past the window. The frightening thing was, I couldn't tell if the shadow had been in the front of the window or outside. In a panic, I ran over to the window and once again, I saw a huge silhouette closer to the cabin, but still at the edge of the woods. Rooted to the spot, I stared and barely blinked, trying my best to see if it was real. It seemed like hours went past, but eventually, I had to blink. When I did, the shadow disappeared. I really thought a crazy man was watching me, and I decided that I had to leave. But what if he was waiting for me outside? I gathered up my things and ran to the front door, but I stopped when I heard something fall over in the next room. Was he inside? I had no way of knowing, and I did not want to find out. I opened the door and ran as fast as I could to the car. I was so grateful when the engine started immediately. While driving off, I looked in the rearview mirror, and I swear, I could still see the outline of a person. But when I slowed down for one last look, they were gone. It might sound odd, but I actually gave the property away to my dad, who hasn't had any issues there at all.